Hi everyone, this is Wendy and welcome back to Overexposed, a podcast by Pexels. On this podcast, we profile ordinary people doing extraordinary things made by and for ambitious creatives. Our guest today is the wonderful Gia Wertz. As a young adult, Gia found interest in pursuing stories about those who were wrongly convicted. She left a successful career in the fashion industry after 20 years to pursue documentary filmmaking, specializing in investigating the inconsistencies of the American criminal justice system. Upon graduating from the New York Film Academy, she released her debut film, Conviction, which profiles the story of Jeffrey Deskovic, who was wrongly convicted of rape and murder at the age of 16. This heart-wrenching documentary explores the after-effects of growing up in prison and one's fight for freedom. Since the release, her film has been featured on Amazon Prime and selected for numerous festivals. In this episode, we talk to Gia about how she accelerated her film career by taking thoughtful, efficient steps, which led to how quickly she saw success after just starting in the film world. It was such a treat to have Gia's expertise on this podcast, so keep listening. Thank you so much, Gia, for joining us today on this podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me, Wendy. It's awesome.
So first of all, just want to say congratulations on the release of your documentary, which has been selected at numerous film festivals, including winning the Best Picture at Georgia Shorts Film Festival this weekend. That's amazing. And it's now featured on Amazon. That's crazy.
Yeah. It was really exciting. We won Best Picture and Best Cinematography this past weekend. Yeah, at the Georgia Shorts and the Georgia Documentary Film Festival. So that was super exciting. It's been a lot of fun and really rewarding, which is great.
That's so great to hear. I'm super excited to dive deeper and talk a little bit more about your documentary. But I just wanted to ask, how does it feel to finally have your debut film out into the world?
It feels awesome. It's I always say this, it's kind of funny. It's super rewarding and it's been a really great experience making the film. So it's such a good feeling for it to be well received and for it to be out there for people to see, because I've worked on it for like a year, you know. On the flip side, I always feel a little bit weird saying that it feels great, because it is such a tough topic, you know, and it's such a sad and heartbreaking thing that people go through. But it is also nice to shed light on the cause, and also just the filmmaking process is pretty interesting, you know, so it does feel good. And actually Jeff, the subject of the film, is so happy about the film, which makes me feel really, really good, you know?
Yeah, of course. It must be so rewarding having worked on this for so long and finally having it out, but also, like you mentioned, as an awareness piece to be able to show people that this is what it's like to be behind the scenes of someone who was wrongly convicted.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
So you just won Best Picture and Best Cinematography at the Georgia Shorts Film Festival. What is it like doing all of these film festivals online now?
Yeah, that's been a really interesting experience. You know, I feel for the festival organizers too, because, you know, nobody expected COVID, obviously. So they had to kind of scramble to turn the events virtual, right? They've always done in-person events. So they're just trying to figure it out too. Everyone's just trying to figure it out. So it's been an interesting experience. Of course, you know, kudos to them for like pivoting so quickly and making it happen. But from a filmmaker's perspective, it's been a little lackluster, because you get so excited that you got into the festivals and then you're going to see your film on a big screen and you're going to get audience feedback and you'll get to actually meet people that see your film for the first time. And then when it goes virtual, you don't get to do any of that stuff. You don't get to see people's reactions or hear like what part of the film that really like resonated with them, or, you know, where they like, it's funny, at the Georgia Film Festival, it played, obviously, like it was an in-person festival, so it played there. And when, at the point where Jeff says, there's one part in the film where Jeff says a lawyer came to let me know that I'd be getting out of prison, and the crowd like gasped, you know. But to be there to hear it and kind of like pay attention to what really gets to people and what parts they, you know, clapped at or liked or whatever, is just so invaluable. So not having that at the virtual festivals kind of really sucks.
Yeah. Even with, like, I remember with sports games and even any sort of thing that you prepared a long time for, the greatest thing is to be able to go to these festivals or gatherings where you can meet like-minded people. And I think, yeah, we've definitely come to the part of quarantine where it's like the beginning of it was everything was online and it was so exciting. Everyone was working from home, but now we're kind of craving those in-person connections again.
For sure. I think more people that might have complained about having to go to the office all the time will appreciate it now because they like the, you know, the interaction with other people. Yeah,
I can imagine that it would be definitely a huge change from having these in-person festivals, but it's great to see that everybody is pivoting so quickly so these filmmakers can get recognized and rewarded for their
works. Yeah, it is. It's really nice. And it was just so nice to connect with other filmmakers too, you know, and celebrate their wins and our wins and the subjects of not only my film, but other people had the subject of their documentaries there at the screening too. It was really nice.
So before you were a filmmaker, you had your start in the fashion world as a designer and founder, and your company Studio 15 did super well. It was featured on Forbes, Sports Illustrated, and Access Hollywood. So what influenced you to make the switch from a career in the fashion industry to pursuing independent filmmaking?
So I worked in the fashion industry for 20 years. I also did photography for 20 years. And so I really loved both of those, except for when it came to, I guess I really enjoyed the fashion industry for the first, you know, 12, 13, 14 mm-hmm. years. I was really young when I got into it. And so for me, it felt like I would do this as a hobby. To get paid to do something that you love felt like I'd hit the jackpot. And, you know, this was my going to be my career. This was it, you know? And then when I got in my 30s, I started to feel like I wanted to do more than just work with clothes. Like, I didn't want to just keep making more money for huge corporations. I wanted to do something that helps a cause or something that, you know, is important to me. And wrongful convictions was always something that I really cared about. And so when I was like 19 or so or 20, I had read a book called The 16th Round by Reuben Carter. And for anyone who doesn't know who Reuben Carter is, he was a famous boxer in the 60s. And he was wrongfully convicted of a murder that he didn't commit. And after he'd exhausted all of his appeals and had kind of had nowhere to turn, he wrote a book. And that book is The 16th Round. And because he wrote it as kind of a plea just to the public, just like, somebody just help me, like, hear my story. Mm-hmm. It was very, very heartbreaking, but also super compelling. And for some reason, like, his words just kind of stuck with me because it was horrifying to think that someone's mm-hmm. just, you know, locked away and for something they didn't do. Like, that would be not only a physical, you know, hell, but a mental hell. And so, yeah, it just stuck with me. And so when I decided I wanted to do something else, that was a cause that I'd always cared about for a long time. And then Serial came out, the podcast, and my husband came home from work one day and was like, you got to hear Serial. And I was like, nah, this is before podcasts were even a thing, really, you know? So I was like, mm-hmm. no, I really am a visual person. I like to see, like, you know, the picture with the audio. I can't just do audio. So I was like, nah. And he was like, oh, it's a true crime story, which I've always loved. And he's like, it's about a Pakistani family. And I'm, you know, my family's Pakistani originally. So I was like, well, that kind of intrigued me. And I said, let's hear it. And of course I heard it. And like the rest of the world, I was totally engrossed in the story. And that's what brought that cause back to the forefront in my mind, where I was like, oh, wait, you know, this is something that I really want to contribute to the cause and help people who've been wrongfully convicted. So that put the idea back in my head like 15 years later.
It's crazy to think that something you were interested in would later become something that you do as a career, which is so crazy to kind of think back.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's so awesome mm-hmm. because it really feels right. Like, I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, it just feels just right. I don't know how else to explain it. But the very first shoot I went on to shoot Jeff, the first interview I did with him, I came home and I told my husband, like, I haven't had this feeling of like, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing since I first picked up a camera to start photography. And now that I'm doing cinematography, it just is that same feeling all over again. It's really, really awesome.
Yeah, there's nothing that replaces that feeling. And it's really hard to describe. But yeah, it's like you do something and you know that that's what you're supposed to do. So I want to go back to talking about your film Conviction. What inspired you to tell Jeffrey's story, as heartbreaking as it is, as the topic of your very first film?
So after I listened to Serial, I was, I 100% believe Adnan, who is the subject of Serial, is innocent. And I was really wanting to do something to help him at the time. I didn't know Jeff at the time. And so I organized a fundraiser here in New York, and I donated the funds. I like got some local musicians together and did a little event at a pub in the Upper West Side. And we donated, raised a few thousand dollars, and we donated it to Adnan's legal defense fund. But in that planning process, I was planning it with a friend, and we were talking about getting a speaker for the fundraiser. And she was like, I know somebody, and he has a very similar story to Adnan. He was also 16, and he was wrongfully convicted of a murder that he didn't commit. And he was also in high school. It was eerily similar. And I said, yeah, I'd love to meet him. She's like, he's out now. And I met him at an event a while back. And so she introduced me to Jeff. That she knew Jeff. And so she introduced me. Jeff ended up being the speaker at my fundraiser for Adnan. And that's how we met 5 years ago. And then fast forward to now, we were doing this. I was planning to go into film school. And once I did go into film school, I was looking for a subject for my first project in school. And Jeff was the first person that came to mind because I wanted to focus on wrongful convictions and I knew him personally. So it was just like, it made sense. And I reached out to him and he was like, yeah, absolutely. And that's how we started working on this.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I had no idea that you knew him before you guys both started working on this film.
Yeah. I mean, I only met him at that fundraiser 5 years ago and then talked to him a couple of times here and there. So I didn't know him very well, but it was somebody, you know, that I had access to, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what was the process from there? So you met him before and then you decided to go to film school. And is that when you decided that you wanted to pursue this film?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I went to film school knowing that I wanted to pursue films about wrongful convictions. That's the reason I went to film school. And then when I was in film school, as soon as my very first project in school, when they asked us to start drafting out our first short film idea for an assignment, I reached out to Jeff. He was the one that I wanted to, you know, create content around in school, not thinking I was going to do anything with it. That's the funny thing. Like I thought it was going to be, you know, I'd have good interviews and stuff and I might do something with it, but I wasn't thinking I was going to have a short film. And, but I, mm-hmm. because I knew exactly the topic that I wanted to focus on, I did every single project in school about Jeff, because I knew that in the end, it was all going to be around the topic of wrongful conviction, which was my goal. My goal was to come out with footage that I can do something with afterwards. But what ended up happening is for my final film in school, I made an 8-minute short, and it was a slightly different variation of the short that's out there now, just much shorter. And one of the TAs in school watched it as part of like the editing process. And he was like, this is great. You have to submit this to festivals. And I was like, what? I wasn't like at all thinking that. I didn't even think it was like good enough to submit, you know? And he said, no, you need to. And so I thought, well, hey, I may as well try. Why not? You know? And so that's how I ended up submitting it. So I submitted it to just a handful. And within the first month, we got into 3 festivals. And so because we got into so many so fast, I submitted to more because I was like, hey, this is working. And just kind of went from there. And then I edited to make a longer, like a 21-minute version. And it just kind of, everything, just one thing led to the next. And, you know, here we are.
Yeah. And what I find so inspiring about your story is that not only did you make the conscious switch into film, but you kind of had a double purpose for everything in a way. Like you were able to use your resources, which is going to film school, to serve the purpose of having a film at the end. And I think that's something that people don't really think about, is that, oh, I need to finish school for the sake of finishing school, and then I'll do whatever I want to do next. And I think that's so amazing that you're able to combine those two to accelerate your own journey to releasing your first film so quickly after graduating.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When I went to film school, my son was only one. Like I had just had a baby. So efficiency is like the name of the game. Everything has to be crazy efficient or you don't get anything done. So that's how I am anyways. I'm a Virgo perfectionist, like type A personality. So efficiency is always really important to me. But I think it was even more so because I had my son and it was like, I had such limited time. So I was like, how do I go to school and do something that's going to like be what I want to work in? And so it did. It really helped me to do it that way.
Yeah, it's really smart to be able to kind of combine those two together. As an independent filmmaker, imagine you don't have the Hollywood budget and the Hollywood crew to be able to make your film. So how do you manage all the different aspects of it when you're by yourself or even working with a small team, from editing to filming to the sound design and everything in between?
You know, so I didn't do all of it in when I would the first half, the first like 10 minutes of the film, or 10 minutes of the finished film, I had shot with two or three people from my school. And so I had help in the beginning. So that was great because I had an audio person and a camera, you know, a cinematographer, and then myself. And so I had, it was a great learning curve because I was able to get help from other students to get it started. And then by the time school ended and they had done like part of the film with me, I had a better grasp of how to do audio and how to do the other things. So then I was able to kind of take it from that point and then do most of it myself from that point forward. Yeah. So I did do all the editing, but I didn't do everything else by myself. But the great thing is, well, I have to say, I went to New York Film Academy, and the amazing thing about going there was they did teach you every aspect of it, really like from start to finish. And so you had to have a really good grasp of audio, and you had to have a really good grasp of, you know, the camera before you could move on to future projects into your final. And so that was really helpful in later on trying to do it all myself because I understood how to do it. You know? Yeah. Yeah. But otherwise, it's just a matter of serious time management.
Yeah, and that's such an important quality to have, to be able to understand all different aspects of where you're trying to pursue a career in, because you could specialize in just cinematography, but especially if you're working on something on your own, it really helps to be able to dabble in different aspects. So later on, even if you are working with other people, to have some sort of empathy and understanding of where you want things to go.
Yes, for sure. That's how I felt in the fashion industry when I used to work in the corporate side. You know, I started from being like a part-time salesperson in a retail store to going all the way up, you know, into the corporate running, you know, hundreds of stores and stuff like that, and working with the designers and all of that. And because I had an understanding of how everything works at the, you know, basically the lowest level, it was, I could do my job so much better once I moved up the ranks, you know. It's the same thing in film. Like when I work with editors, they're so thankful that I know how to edit, because I don't have unrealistic expectations of what they can do. I understand like what we provide, it has to be the footage we provide has to be good enough that they can do their job, you know, and I can't expect them to edit something in a day when it takes, you know, 5 weeks. And it does really help. It really helps.
With photography, there's like a camera and you have one still frame, but a film was like that times like a million. So what kind of resources did did you have to rely on when you were pursuing this for the first time on your own?
Yeah. So New York Film Academy was a great resource, first of all, because, you know, when you leave school and now you've met these other 15 people who are all in the film industry now. So they're a great resource, right? First and foremost. And then a lot of the professors in our program were Emmy nominated filmmakers themselves. So they were a huge source of information, obviously, and guidance. So that was huge. And then when I finished school, I finished school last year. And then by the time I was almost finished the film earlier this year, the pandemic hit. And while, you know, it was terrible and I thought it was going to be terrible, there was a little silver lining. It was that everybody was at home. So even established filmmakers, people you would never have access to, were all at home. And they were really willing to hop on Zoom calls because they weren't doing anything. And they, you know, it's usually people who make films and are this busy usually thrive under pressure work, you know, having a busy work environment, and everybody was home with not that much to do. And so surprisingly, I had so many calls with so many people like that were either running little Zoom Q&As or doing master classes or just willing to hop on the phone with you to just chat. So that really helped. When the pandemic started, I think for the next 5 or 6 months, I had taken almost like 46 or 47 masterclasses other than school. And so that was such a huge resource, like that wealth of knowledge from people who've done it for decades. That's really how I got my film out on Amazon so quickly, because I was able to learn so much from people who have done it before and done it, you know, professionally for a long time.
Yeah. And that's so important that you mentioned like learning from those you want to be like, or like your role models, because yeah, like school can teach you the theory and the underlying basics of everything, give you a solid foundation. Like, although what one person does might not guarantee that you'll succeed in the same way, it will at least give you an idea of where to go and where to start.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's like, you might not be able to replicate what they did, but you're definitely going to be able to learn a lot from what they did and then apply it to, you know, your own life and your own projects. Someone said to me, you know, along the process, that the best thing you can do is to look at your mentors or people that are where you want to be, and then like study what they did and learn from them, because that they are already where you want to be. So they have the formula, they've somehow figured it out, you know? Yeah.
So for those who are looking to follow in your footsteps, launching a film career from scratch, or wanting to switch from another career into filmmaking, what is the first step that they should take?
You know, I wrote about this in an article that I wrote. I think people should just start. Like, that's the best thing you can do. Whatever aspect of filmmaking it is that you're good at, or you have some skill or training in, you know, whether that be behind the camera, being a cinematographer, or, you know, audio or sound design or editing, like, you know, Premiere or whatever, focus your efforts on that. And then try and collaborate with other people who have the other skills you need. I mean, it's funny because, of course, if you're working in narrative, it's a lot, you need a lot more people. But if you're working on a documentary, you actually need fewer people, because documentaries are usually, you know, you're shooting in places sometimes you're not allowed to be, mm-hmm. or you're shooting really personal stories. You can't have like a, you know, a crew of 20 coming with you, right? Mm-hmm. So you really only need two people, yourself mm-hmm. plus two people, to actually do the filming, right? Like a good cameraman or a good sound person, and then a director / producer. And so anybody, because it is such few people, anybody can start, you know, anybody can do it. It's just important that you surround yourself with the right people who have the right skills, and then like a similar goal in mind as you do, so that everybody's on the same page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And kind of going back, like I remember you mentioned that you would always take your camera everywhere you go to film B-roll and everything. So that's super cool that you're able to like take advantage of any situation you're in and thinking about the end goal that you have in mind.
Yes, it's so funny because I, you know, my son was like 1.5 when I was finishing school, and so, or almost 2, I think. And films need so much B-roll. I mean, you end up needing so much B-roll, which I did not know before I started. You need way more B-roll than you actually need your, you know, actual footage. Yeah. And like I was telling you, I took my camera everywhere. Like even when I took my son to the park to play, I took my camera with me. And I live in New York, so there's always NYPD around, and there's always, you know, all kinds of things. And I took my camera out, and I was just filming all of the time, not only for practice, but also just got great B-roll. And a lot of that B-roll is actually in my movie that's on Amazon on Prime. And actually, what's really funny about it is if you hear that B-roll, obviously that B-roll has no volume on it in the film, right? Because I've used just the video. But if you hear it on my computer, you can hear, you know, a baby screaming and the whole thing in the background, because that's how I shot some of it. But that goes to say, you know, anybody can do it, and you just have to get creative, and you have to really want it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And going out and being able to kind of film things as you go, I'd imagine you kind of accumulate a lot of footage on top of like all of the like the storyline of Jeff's story and how you wanted to really tell that narrative. So your first short is only 21 minutes long. How did you decide in the editing process what to include in such a short time frame?
Yeah, so that I owe the professors at the school all the credit for that, because I did not know what to do in the beginning, because Jeff's story is so complex, obviously, and he's been through so much that you could never tell his story in 20 minutes. And so when I was editing it, I had lots of interesting parts of the interview that I wanted to include. And one of my professors said, when you're making a short, you have to make sure, and even actually with feature films, you have to do this, but with shorts, you have to especially do it. Have one central question that you want to answer. And whatever that question is, everything that you put in the film should be working towards answering that question, or should be directly answering that question. And if it's not, no matter how in love you are with the footage, or how in love you are with the question or the response you got, you have to cut it. It has to end up on the cutting room floor, because you're going to distract the audience. And So for a short, it has to be, my question was, what are Jeff's personal struggles because of what happened to him? And that was it. And I couldn't go on and talk about, you know, how he was beaten up in prison or how he was this or how he was that. I couldn't really dive deep into those things because I would have given too much information and I would have not had a singular focus or point to my film. And the audience would have been a little bit lost as to what we were trying to communicate, or they would have walked away thinking, you know, this is great, but it was just too much information in too little time. And I don't fully understand Jeff's story. So it was important that I didn't try and tell his whole story, that I just told that one piece of the story. And that's actually the reason I'm working on the feature length film now, because Jeff's story is amazing. And there's so much more to it that it does warrant an hour and a half long film. So I'm working on that now so I can include all the stuff that I had to cut out of the short. But it's key to focus.
Yeah, and it's smart to be able to work backwards too, to have like an end goal. So your end goal is to be able to showcase his personal struggles of how he went through this and work backwards from there to kind of start decide where your starting point is and what's most important. Because I think a lot of times when you want to start something, it's super overwhelming. There's so many aspects and you want to include everything, but sometimes, you know, like less is more.
Yes. And as a cinematographer and a director, you really do fall in love with footage. Like you film it and you're like, oh, it was such a beautiful shot, or I just loved how he said this, or I loved how he answered this question. But sometimes that doesn't serve the film and it's just got to go no matter how much you personally love it, you know?
And what was Jeff's reaction the first time he saw like the final draft of everything?
You know, I was so bummed because we were going to watch it. The film was supposed to premiere at the Anthology Film Archives Theater in Lower East Side in New York. 2 weeks before our premiere, the pandemic hit.
Oh,
and
no.
Literally, I think like 2 weeks or a week and a half before our premiere, the theaters got shut down. And so it got canceled. Yeah. And so we were super excited. That would have been his first time seeing it. And I would have got to see his reaction in person. And that didn't happen. So he had to see it virtually because that festival went virtual and played it virtually. But it was really funny. He called me afterwards and he loved it. He said, I would give the film an AAAA+. And I was like, awesome. And then he was like, but I don't like some of these shots and they got to go. Like, I don't like the shot of my hands. And I was like, Jeff, that's like 5 seconds of the film. Like, we can't take it out now. And we had a little bit of a disagreement for a few minutes. And then we came to an understanding and it was fine. But it was so funny that, you know, out of the whole thing, it was like this 3 to 5 second shot. And he was like, I don't like this one little shot.
Yeah, that's so funny.
So we joke about that now.
Yeah. So throughout this entire process of making this film, what do you think was the most important aspect of documentary filmmaking that you've learned so far?
So I think the most important thing is that the story that you're telling has to be compelling. That is the most important thing in making a documentary. When I asked Andrea, the department head at New York Film Academy, towards the end of the program, I said, you know, what camera should I buy? Because I want to keep working on this. And she was like, you know what? It doesn't matter. She's like, film with what you have, because you can have the best camera in the world. You can have the best, you know, sound guy in the world. But if you don't have a compelling story, it doesn't matter. She was like, but if you have a compelling story and a really well-crafted story, then the camera doesn't matter. She's like, and then nobody cares what you use to shoot it with, even if it's an iPhone, because the story is so good. And that's really what that sticks in my mind. That's what I really took away from.
Yeah, from that's it. Also really important. It's really easy, especially nowadays, to get sidetracked of like what gear is coming out and like always wanting the best, but doesn't necessarily mean that it will correlate well with what you're trying to do.
Yes, exactly. Especially, I mean, this is specifically for documentaries, of course. You know, we can't do this with everything. It's funny because Netflix has very specific guidelines as far as what cameras you have to shoot with. Otherwise, they won't even accept your films. Like, they won't even look at them to consider them. But then, yeah, and it's like it's not a long list, and it's very expensive cameras and it's very specific cameras. You know, it's not even just the make. It's not like, oh, it's just Canon cameras. It's like very specific 3 models of the Canon camera kind of thing. And I remember asking the department head there, the professor, like, well, how come they have this list, but then I see films on there that aren't shot on those? I know they're not, you know, I can tell. And she was like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, those films, the story and the content was so compelling that after the fact, they didn't care. They bought it anyways, you know? So it's just interesting.
I was going to say, I was like, there's no way that all the films on Netflix can be shot by like just a short list of cameras. There's so many.
Yeah, right. It's because we're in the documentary world. So there's leeway, right? Because often in documentaries, I mean, you're always shooting real life, but often you're shooting when you weren't expecting to shoot. So it, like you said, it's whatever camera you have on you. Like if something happens and it relates to your film, you're just going to whip out your iPhone. You got to shoot it, right? Yeah.
And your film is now on Amazon Prime, which is amazing. How was that process like? How does one get their film on such like a big network?
Yeah, it takes a little research and a lot of work. But you know, we first went through the film festival circuit, and we've been selected by 10 film festivals around the world. And then obviously this last weekend, you know, we got a couple of awards, which was awesome. So that helped. Obviously, because we had that stamp of approval. And then, like I was saying, all those master classes I took from filmmakers who are more established, that's where I learned the process of how to go about, you know, submitting it to Amazon Prime and everything. And it's not that hard once you know your stuff, but you got to really, you got to follow all the rules and jump through all the hoops and, you know, have all your artwork exactly how they want it and all that stuff.
So right now you're working on the feature length of the documentary. What can we expect to see on that one?
So the short features, like I was talking about, the short really focuses on Jeff's personal struggles. The feature length doc really dives much deeper into Jeff's whole story, and it touches on the police and prosecutor misconduct. How did Jeff confess to something he didn't do, something so horrific that, you know, he had nothing to do with, but yet he confessed to it. There was DNA evidence in Jeff's case. And so it talks about, we go a little deeper into why Jeanine Pirro didn't allow the DNA to be tested. Because if she had, then Jeff could have gotten out years earlier. Mm-hmm. So it just goes much deeper into the justice system and what all happened to cause this, you know, horrific series of events. And it goes a little bit more into Jeff's personal life now and his mom and what she thought of the whole thing back then and how she's doing now with it. And a few other people that were involved in the story.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And did you have to go out and shoot more footage for this, or was it all from like shooting it before and just compiling it into a longer feature length?
No, I shot a lot more more footage. I interviewed a lot more people and did a lot more shoots too.
Yeah. Well, that's so cool that you're able to kind of have this story, but also be able to add more to it and just see it grow. I don't think that's very common with a lot of things. So that's really exciting that we got to kind of get a glimpse of Jeff's story and now get the full understanding of everything.
Yeah, I know it is. It's not the normal course that people take when making a film. I ended up, it's so funny. It just all kind of organically happened this way. But the reason I did it this way is because my professor said that when submitting to festivals, you have a greater chance of getting in if you make a short, because they can program a lot more shorts. Like, you know, festivals are usually one day long, so they can't do 100 hour and a half long movies, but you know, they can do lots and lots of 10 minute movies or 20 minute movies. And so they suggested that a short would be a better way in. And I think they were right. And so that's how I ended up on this path.
Yeah. Well, it's all going back to just listening to the stories of others can really accelerate you and kind of saves you from a lot of like mistakes along the way too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's for sure accelerated the process for me 100%. If I had done this on my own, I don't even know if I'd be this far along yet.
So what's next for you? Do you think you're still going to stay and pursue documentaries or look into other aspects of filmmaking as well?
No, I'm going to stay in documentaries. I mean, the whole reason I switched careers is because I really wanted to focus not only on documentaries, but wrongful conviction stories. And so, you know, I'll probably expand out to, you know, wider range of things a little later on. But for the next foreseeable future, I just want to focus on wrongful conviction stories. So I'm in post-production on Jeff's story, the feature length one, and I'm just starting to write out the third one that I'm going to start working on, which is also a wrongful conviction story. And so for the next 2 years, I'll probably just be working on these two, and then I'll see, you know, what the future holds after that.
Yeah, that's super exciting. So for everyone who is listening, where can we find your work online?
Yeah, on Facebook, our page is Conviction Documentary. And on Instagram, it's Gia Docs, like short for documentary. So it's JIADOCS. And then my website is just my full name. It's Gia Wertz, JIAWERTZ or Z .com.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Gia, for sharing your story and all the incredible advice that you have for upcoming filmmakers. It's great to see that you were able to create this amazing film in such a short, like, accelerated amount of time. It seems almost unbelievable how quickly you got everything together and how well it's doing.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, it's funny, like when you really, really love what you do, it's kind of easier because you spend all your free time doing it too, you know, because you enjoy it so much. So maybe that's why it's been a little bit fast-tracked. Yeah. But I really appreciate that. Thank you.